You are listening to Live from Lord North Street, a podcast from the Institute of Economic Affairs. I'm Kate Andrews, Associate Director at the IEA. 75 years ago this month, Friedrich Hayek, an Austrian economist working at LSE, published his manifesto for a free and liberal society, The Road to Serfdom. The book, or some might say the siren alert to the perils of socialism, was written in the evenings between 1940 and 1943, while he was acting as a wartime Cambridge fire warden. Hayek and his publishers were expecting modest sales. Indeed, wartime paper rationing meant that it only printed in small runs, but the publication soon turned into a popular phenomenon. When Reader's Digest picked up a condensed version in 1945, it got a print run of several million copies. Here to speak to me about why The Road to Serfdom became a huge success and remains relevant to this day are the IEA's research fellow, Professor Philip Booth, and the director of the Adam Smith Institute, Dr. Eamon Butler. The Road to Serfdom has famously become known as a warning against socialist ideology, but in reality it's broader than that. Hayek was writing in wartime against a fascist dictator. It's not just about socialism, Philip, is it, but about state control more generally?
Yes, it's really about state planning and the impossibility of planning and the results which can arise when it's decided that the state should plan and control the economy rather than individuals and organisations make their own plans. And the reason it's dangerous when we have state planning is because it's impossible really to conceive of how we can plan the economy unless there is general agreement about what the objectives and the means of achieving those objectives of economic activity should be. It's impossible to get that general agreement, and in the end the only way you can actually obtain the order which central planning requires is by force and dictatorship. And that was really the warning of The Road to Serfdom.
Eamon, in the 80s and 90s, especially when the IEA and the Adam Smith Institute were making great waves in terms of reforming public policy to advocate for privatization and more market forces, it could broadly be said that the left wanted more state control and the right wanted less. But that doesn't really seem to be the case anymore, does it? If we look across the West, it seems that these populist movements, especially on the far right sometimes, are looking for more state control as well.
Well, this is really what happens in a so-called democratic system, that you get large majorities imposing their will on everybody else. And that, I think, is part of Hayek's message once again, that central planning is something where every step looks as if it's a good way to proceed, but at the same time it takes you to an end that's no part of your intention. And people in Nazi Germany would not have voted for Hitler, as they did, if they'd known that it would lead to the Holocaust and the gas chambers. They just wouldn't have done it. And so in democratic politics today, you get majorities trying to decide more and more how people should live, what lifestyle they should have, and what they should do, where they should go to school, what their healthcare should be like. And you get more and more into a tyranny of the majority. So there are parallels with The Road to Serfdom in that.
And I think in a sense it was ever thus. I mean, certainly when I first started learning history, people used to talk about, at school, people used to talk about a circle where sort of right and left met. And of course, that merely indicates how vacuous the terms right and left are. There's a spectrum of from people who believe in liberalism to people who believe in state control, and of those who believe in state control, some of them are international socialists and some of them are national socialists. And it is so the populist movements have a more nationalist element to them, but there are also plenty of left-leaning socialists who actually increasingly, I think, are becoming authoritarian in the social sphere, but in a slightly different way from the authoritarianism of the past. Hayek predicts this in Road to Serfdom, and for two reasons really. One is that if national socialism on the national scale is pretty impossible, well, socialism on the international scale is just the idea you can get agreement across all nations about what the ends of economic activity should be and how we should achieve those ends is totally impossible. But the other thing is, in order to get agreement amongst the population about the ends of economic activity, it's far easier to get agreement about something you hate than about things that you like. And the thing that it's easy to whip up hatred about is a mythical enemy or other nations or immigrants or whatever it might be. So Hayek talked about all these things in Road to Serfdom and why socialism can, not necessarily inevitably, but can often lead to the kind of national socialism, populism, and the sort of hostility towards immigrants and other countries that we see amongst populist movements today.
Hayek has an interesting little example in the Road to Serfdom, which is a group of people trying to find a restaurant. And one says, no, I don't like that one. And the other says, oh, I don't like this one. And so on. And they end up somewhere that none of them really want to be. and that is part of the problem with this democratic system.
And yes. the group, of course, can between them find a way of taking a decision. But 70 million people can't find a way of taking a decision until somebody comes along and coerces everybody. And they agree on the plan in general to go to a restaurant, but they can't agree on how to achieve that plan.
Eamon, Hayek had words for the United Kingdom and the United States. He said that both had progressively abandoned that freedom in economic affairs without which personal and political freedom have never existed in the past. Now, this was 75 years ago. Looking at 2019, we might have a sugar tax and we might have energy price caps, but I think many would argue that the UK and the United States are still extremely free. Did Hayek over-exaggerate?
No, I think this country in particular is, the United Kingdom, is free only in name. You have no power to dispose of your property as you wish. You have limited and increasingly limited control over your own lifestyle, how large a can of Coca-Cola you can purchase, or what you can smoke, or what you can inject into your body. All of these things are regulated by the state, even if they don't do any harm to anybody. Your healthcare is provided by the government. Your education is provided by the government. And when you have those sorts of things, especially in education, then you get government attitudes and government policies being indoctrinated into the public. So I think Hayek was absolutely right. And one of the reasons he founded the Mont Pelerin Society after the Second World War in 1947 was to try to keep alive the ideas of liberalism. And then, of course, he went on to explore the spontaneous order and show that we can actually live spontaneously. We don't have to have powerful people like the dictators in the war telling us what to do.
I don't quite agree with that. I don't think the UK of today was quite what Hayek was referring to as the end point, if you like, in the Road to Serfdom. Though I do agree that the UK of today is very much less free than it ought to be. And it's very difficult, and you give some very good examples, it's very difficult to roll back. You know, in the 1980s and 1990s, we might have done to some extent, but only to some extent, and the state is still 40% of national income, healthcare is still totally state-controlled, and so on. I don't think Hayek was saying necessarily, but some might perceive that it's implying that this is an inevitable sort of road that you tread, that once you go down socialist central planning, you'll end up where Nazi Germany was, or the Soviet Union, or today's best example would be Venezuela. But you could also say that, you know, there were some turning points in the UK's history, the obvious ones being in the mid to late 1970s, when sufficient number of people, both in the political elite and also in the population at large, believed that we'd gone too far, and elected a different government and actually promoted a U-turn in the Labour Party's policy in the mid-1970s. And had those turns not been taken, where we would be today, I think is a very interesting question. We might have gone down the road of Argentina and Brazil and the South American countries, which had very high inflation and social dislocation, and we took a different turn. It's always possible to take a different turn. I don't think there's a sort of inevitability of a sort of Marxist determinist type.
And that change, of course, was very much informed by Hayek. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mrs. Thatcher used to carry the Constitution of Liberty in a bag and produce it to her colleagues when they were getting a bit wet. So, yes, the power of ideas is considerable. And Hayek himself, of course, talked of the power of ideas. And politicians come and go, but ideas are much more permanent. And that's the battlefield we have to fight on.
And arguably it was Jay going to Chicago University and coming back and influencing the Labour government in the mid-1970s, which was the start of that process, rather than Thatcher herself as well.
So while Hayek railed against central planning and big government, he did recognize that there was a role for the state. He would have supported certain regulations that, say, prohibited poisonous substances. He understood the need to limit certain working hours and to require certain sanitary arrangements. He also bought into the idea of negative externalities. He recognized that third parties could be affected by others' actions and possibly would have supported regulations protecting the environment and forests and so on. Is this why John Keynes actually said of Hayek's work, in my opinion, it is a grand book. Morally and philosophically, I find myself in agreement with virtually the whole of it. I mean, is that the kind of endorsement do you think Hayek wanted?
I think that quote is much misunderstood. If you actually read Keynes's letter to Hayek, which is about 9 pages, it starts like that, and then the rest of it is just criticism of the whole thing. Keynes was critical, but you're quite right that Hayek is a classical liberal, and classical liberals believe that there is some role for the state, particularly in the provision of justice, and particularly in having the monopoly of force, that only those who are properly nominated to do so should be able to force people and put them in prison and things like that. When you look at Hayek, his list of the exceptions, the things that the state perhaps should do, is really quite long. And this is, I think, the problem of classical liberals generally. I think it's an unstable philosophy, sadly, that you can always argue for more intervention for one reason or another. Right now, it's things like the threat of terrorism. Any emergency, as indeed Hayek himself wrote somewhere, is used as an excuse to... Well, it's used as a reason to have more state control, and then that becomes an excuse to do other things. And so you find that you have anti-terrorism legislation, and then ordinary people are arrested under this legislation for really quite inoffensive misdemeanors.
Yes, I remember having an argument with a friend 33 years ago about whether or not the state had to be involved in defining weights and measures, which I thought could, and indeed have historically, evolved naturally within the markets rather than being imposed by government. And I was rather alarmed after I thought I had won that argument to go home, and literally the next chapter of the Constitution of Liberty, which I was reading at the time, was Hayek talking about how the state should and could be involved in defining weights and measures. And as Eamon said, the list of interventions is quite long, and I'm not sure whether it's a problem of classical liberalism or a problem just of human nature, but I think Hayek, it's fairly clear, I think, in the Constitution of Liberty that although Hayek does define the rule of law, applauds the common law, talks about how you need abstract rules rather than rules which require individuals to do particular things, it's very difficult to draw a line between one type of rule and another. So, and in the Constitution of Liberty, he does talk about the difficulty of writing constitutions in order to guarantee freedom. And I think he references Burke an awful lot more than he references Locke, for example, because he feels the need for tradition and so on to develop. But there is no sharp dividing line, I don't think, if you're a classical liberal, between where the state shouldn't intervene. You have to apply reason and argue the cases and try and hold back those who will find any excuse for a state intervention.
Is this perhaps why there are many libertarian criticisms of the road to serfdom? Some would argue that it makes a very strong case against centrally planned economies, but doesn't embrace enough the concepts of free markets. Do you think that Hayek could have been a bigger advocate for free markets? And if you don't think the road to serfdom covers it, what other books would you recommend to supplement to get in your dose of free market enthusiasm?
Well, of course, he went on to become one of the greatest forces behind the free market intellectual movement on the planet. I think you have to realize that the road to serfdom, rather like Karl Popper's Open Society and Its Enemies, their authors at the time regarded them as a war book. And Hayek said he wrote it out of frustration that he couldn't do anything about bombs falling on London. All he could do is to put forward an intellectual case against central planning and against the rise of dictatorship, which he thought tended to come out of that. And then, of course, after that, he became famous, really, through that book. And after that, he turned his mind much more to developing the ideas of the spontaneous order and showing that society can actually work without controls, order without commands, as he called it. And that is a very powerful idea, which does actually inform those of us who believe in free markets and personal liberty.
He did actually say, I talk about in Road to Serfdom, how those who believed in free markets needed to sort of dream about a utopia which could really attract people to the cause. And that was one of the reasons why people were attracted to socialism, because they put out a dream of what their ideal society would look like, which on paper might look somewhat attractive to a large number of people. And nevertheless, I'm not sure that Hayek, although he moved on to talk about the more positive aspects of how a free society would develop, he never sketched out that utopia, and I think it's largely because it's impossible, because the supporters of free markets believe in something which is a bit more abstract, and they believe that people should be free to pursue their own ideas, ideals and ends, and choose the means to achieve those ends. And as such, you don't know what the outcome of a free society is, except that it will promote general human happiness and welfare. There is a book which the IEA produced on its 50th anniversary called Towards a Liberal Utopia. I don't know whether it does the job very well of sketching out what a free society might look like in areas such as healthcare, pensions, education and so on. Some of the chapters are better than others, but that might be... We were trying to respond in a way to what Hayek was asking for, sketching out what a free society might look for in policy terms, look like in policy terms.
But that is inevitable if you're a liberal. You believe in the spontaneous order. You don't know what that's going to produce.
Yes.
And it's, you know, Hayek's example of playing a game, and you don't know what the results are going to be. You follow the rules, but you don't know what the result is going to be. But the result, as long as you follow the rules, the result is neither fair nor unfair. It's just the result.
Yes.
And therefore, society is dynamic. You know, Hayek is very much of an evolutionist. He believes that things change and adapt and so on. And therefore, you can't predict what this society is going to produce.
We support a spontaneous order doesn't look very good on a placard, really, does it?
So my last question to you, Hayek, as we've discussed, wrote The Road to Serfdom decades upon decades ago. There are always questions about how a publication so old can be relevant to today. But towards the end of The Road to Serfdom, Hayek mentions a European federation. And I'm very aware that we are recording this podcast a week before the UK supposedly is due to leave the European Union on the 29th of March. I'm not going to make any more comment about that as to not date this podcast. But Philip, you wanted to talk about this specifically because this is a prediction that more or less came true.
Hayek really does get the point when it comes to talking about the role of an international order, international organizations and so on. And specifically, he talks about international federations which will put limits on what individual governments could do. Now, you get that sort of thing, say, in war crimes trials, which hold people to account who do evil things during wars, but in a supranational rather than a national court. But he was thinking broader than that, and he was thinking of something like a European Union, but not the one we envisage today, but a European Union which would put constraints on what national governments did in terms of restricting trade and other things as well. And I think the big issue for me when I've decided to vote for Remain was that I thought, on balance, that what the European Union did in that regard was a good thing, because it stopped nations restricting migration, it stopped nations restricting trade and the movement of capital, albeit within a closed group of 28 countries, and it also stopped countries doing various things in relation to nationalising, subsidising industries, discriminating against industries from other businesses from other countries, and so on. Lots of things that the European Union does which Hayek recommended it shouldn't do, that is, actually do central planning and regulate economic activity on a broader international scale, certainly. But on balance, I thought the things which the European Union stopped countries from doing was better than the bad things.
That is the free market side of the European Union, is that it did create checks on power, really, if countries wanted to move in a socialist direction. But of course, when you're weighing up the pros and cons of the EU, my other guest today decided to fall on the other side of the line. Eamon, you thought that the European Union has taken too many steps too far, which is why you supported Brexit.
Yes, I mean, in 1974, I voted to stay in. And then in the last referendum, I voted to leave because I thought that the EU had well exceeded its brief, that when we voted in 1974, we were really voting on an economic free trading bloc, not on a political project. And I see Philip's point, and it is was a difficult decision for all of us because there are indeed pros and cons. I think you're right that Hayek did talk about this sort of federation, and even Churchill talked about a sort of union between Europe, really out of despair as to what had happened during the war, and that a civilized country like Germany could act in such a brutal way. And I think that Hayek wanted to restore liberal values as a way of restoring decency throughout the whole of Europe, including, of course, later on, the Europe that was occupied by the East, and Germany was divided and so on. So he thought that liberal values would were the most important thing in making sure that governments were indeed constrained, that pieces of paper wouldn't necessarily do the job, constitutions wouldn't necessarily do the job. You needed to have those liberal ideas in the hearts and minds of the people.
Both, thank you so much for joining me. This has been a real insight into Hayek's pinnacle work, The Road to Serfdom, which you can download on the IEA's website for free. For more blogs, podcasts, films, and reports, visit iea.org.uk.